Up, Up, and Away, Episode 23, The Man of Steel, Part 3. Hello and welcome to Up, Up, and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I'm your host, Mari Benessi, and, well, guys, we're at the last part of the Man of Steel miniseries. This episode is going to contain issues 5 and 6 of the 1986 John Byrne miniseries that rebooted the Man of Steel for a whole new generation of superfans post-Crisis on Infinite Earths. I am excited to jump into these last two issues. One, because there's some really great stuff in these two issues. And two, because after that, well, the coming episodes of the podcast, let's just say I've got some really cool stuff planned. I have some stories that I have lined up for the next couple episodes that I've been a fan of for a very long time. Ones that I always love to come back to and reread. They just hold a very special spot in my heart. Some very iconic stories, even. So keep an ear out for those. They should be coming. Well, I'm trying to get this podcast back onto a weekly-based schedule. And so far, I think I'm doing a pretty good job of that. So, not too much in terms of Superman news within the past week. The director's cut of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice was released on Tuesday. And that is the digital first version. So anybody that happens to watch their movies through iTunes or through, I think, Vudu is one of the ways that you can watch movies digitally instead of having a physical copy of them. And from what I understand, it's far superior to the theatrical cut. It clears up a lot of questions, and it includes more Clark Kent-based storyline, and it includes more Superman, and it portrays the Man of Steel in a little bit more positive light. So that's good. I'm looking forward to watching it. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to wait until July 19th or so when the film is released for, well, physical copy, because I like to wait for these kind of things. And that does include a digital copy of the film, so I will get to watch it without having a Blu-ray player. Hopefully I can fix that situation before then, but if not, I have a way to watch the director's cut. I really should get one, though. The DVD is kind of going the way of the VHS, and, well, Bob Dylan once wrote, "The times, they are changing." I gotta get with it. It's plain and simple, I just gotta get with the times. Yeah, other than that, not too much has been going on in the world of Superman. There were no Superman comic books out this week. That is the week of the 29th of June, 2016. However, there was a figure that was released, and it was part of their the DC Collectibles Designer Series based on the art of the late, great Darwin Cook. Now, they had, I think, three figures that were released. One of them is a Batman figure. The other one is a Harley Quinn figure. And the third figure, and the one that I want to get the most, is a Supergirl figure. And it is absolutely wonderfully designed. It looks so much like Darwin Cook's art style. It's unbelievable. And it comes with not one, but two super pets. It comes with a Crypto and a Streaky the Super Cat. So if the Supergirl figure itself weren't the sole reason to pick up this figure, hopefully those two super pets kind of sell you on it. And I was already going to buy the figure because, well, I love me some Supergirl. I love me some Darwin Cook, too. But the minute that I found out that they were going to have Crypto and Streaky, I was sold 110%. So as of the recording of this episode, I do not have the figure in my hands, and that's unfortunate because, well, I really like to get the reviews out for new figures the day that the figure is released for my YouTube channel. But hopefully that might be changed by this weekend. I will be at the SuperCon for this Saturday. So hopefully some vendor will be selling that figure. And if they are, well, it's coming home with me. Now, speaking of SuperCon, besides the fact that I'm going to be going, there are some incredible guests coming. They have Neil Adams coming there. I'm not sure if I want to go meet him. I mean, he's drawn some incredible images. The cover for Superman number 233 is one of the most iconic Superman covers of all time, but $30 for an autograph is a little bit steep. He is coming to a local comic book store, actually, over this way, called Past, Present, Future. And they're a pretty cool comic shop. They have him coming in on June 30th. So, probably by the time that I release this episode, it'll be past. I don't know how my schedule is going to be. Probably going to get this out there by Saturday. But, well, to people who happen to have time machines and they're listening to this maybe 3 or 4 years down the road, and we have that technology, stop on over to Past, Present, Future to go see Mr. Neil Adams. They have Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name, coming, and I will be getting some stuff signed by him because, well, he draws a really darn good Superman. They also have Elliot S. Magan, and I'm also going to be getting some items signed by him. From what I understand, I don't think he charges for autographs. I think that's what it said on the SuperCon website. And if that's the case, I will be getting my copies of Superman The Last Son of Krypton and Miracle Monday signed. And those two books were given to me by Mr. Dave McElveny. So I don't know if I mentioned this on a previous episode, but thank you again, Dave. I really appreciate it. It was awesome to receive those in the mail. And then, this isn't really a Superman-related guest, but Henry Winkler is going to be there. And aside from Superman, Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz on the 70s and, you know, early 80s TV show Happy Days, was one of my heroes growing up. Still one of my heroes. So for me, it's like Superman, the Lone Ranger, and the Fonz. And those three characters have been incredibly influential in my life. I actually went out and purchased season 5 of Happy Days, and that's the season where they have the three-part episode where the Cunninghams go to Hollywood and they bring the Fonz along. And it's been a while since I've seen it, but I think Potsy and Ralph Mouth. That the third part of that episode is where the Fonz jumps the shark. And that's where that phrase comes from, jumping the shark. Now, of course, I still love every episode that came afterwards. And everybody that critiques the show says, oh, well, the point where the Fonz jumps the shark is where they ran out of ideas for the show. And it kind of just went downhill because they've done everything that they could have possibly done. I disagree. There's some great character development after that, but I saw it at my local Barnes & Noble, and it was priced pretty decently. It was like $16.99, which is actually really cheap for a season of a TV show at a Barnes & Noble. Their shows can range from like $30 to maybe $50, so I got a pretty good steal on that, and then I had my buddy's Barnes & Noble discount, which got me an extra 10% off. So I got that specifically to have Henry Winkler sign that. I don't care if I have to pay it. It's weird. I'm willing to pay $30 for Henry Winkler to sign my copy of Season 5 of Happy Days, but I'm not willing to shell out $30 to have Neil Adams sign a comic book cover. It's really weird. I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up more with the Fonz than I did with Neil Adams' work. And not that I don't appreciate Neil Adams. Well, the coming of the Superman leaves a lot to be desired, but I would much rather have Henry Winkler's signature than Neil Adams. I don't know what that says about me, but, you know, whatever. That, and I also really needed season 5 of Happy Days because I need to get the entire series. I've seen almost every episode. I think there's only, like, 30 episodes that I haven't seen. So I caught all those in syndication from, I don't know what it's going by now, but it used to go by the channel name The Hub. And that's where I caught the entirety of Superman the Animated Series and a lot of Batman the Animated Series and Batman Beyond and stuff. I didn't get to grow up on those as a kid. So that's how I really caught those episodes. Who else is going? Scott Collins is going to be there, and then Greg Capullo is going to be there. They actually have a DC Collectibles figure coming out in December. It's Superman, and it's based on Greg Capullo's art. So I'm going to have to pick that one up. DC Collectibles just keeps giving me a lot of figures that I really want, or figures that I didn't know that I wanted until I've seen the pictures of them. Still not entirely sold on the Lee Ramaggio Lex Luthor figure, just because it's a really odd choice to have him in a business suit instead of like power armor or something else, but it's Lex Luthor and it's Superman related, so I gotta pick it up. I do like the Lee Ramaggio Superman figure that they have coming out. The wrinkles on the suit are a little bit distracting, but that cape is wonderfully sculpted, and the head sculpt is pretty spot on, so I'm gonna have to pick that up. So there's not too much else going on. So without further ado, let's jump into the meat of this episode and take a look at The Man of Steel, issues 5 and 6. Alright, issue 5 of The Man of Steel. This one is cover dated December 1986. Executive editor Dick Giordano, cover artist John Byrne, writers John Byrne, pencils John Byrne, inks by Dick Giordano, colors by Tom Ziuko, letters by John Costanza. Editor is Andrew Helford, and the issue is entitled The Mirror Cracked. Superman apprehends a thug wearing a LexCorp-designed super battle suit. He flies the goon to LexCorp's Hong Kong branch office and presents him to Lex Luthor. Luthor claims that the suit was stolen from him, and he bears no responsibility for any attacks made against Superman's person by whoever was wearing it at the time, and a side effect of the suit's use renders the user too brain damaged to testify to the contrary. Still carrying the goon, Superman flies back towards Metropolis. Lex, meanwhile, consults with one of his scientists, Dr. Tang, who is overseeing a classified program known as Project Changeling. By scanning Superman's DNA, Tang hoped to construct a perfect clone duplicate of the Man of Steel, one that would be completely subservient to Lex Luthor. However, Tang did not take Superman's alien biology into account, and the Superman clone crystallizes, transforming into a twisted, bizarro mockery of the true Superman. Disgusted by Tang's failure, Lex orders the creature destroyed. Bizarro escapes, however, and flies towards Metropolis. Sometime later, Bizarro arrives in town and begins demonstrating behavioral patterns similar to that of Superman. He assists a disabled ambulance and saves the blind Lucy Lane from committing suicide. He then steals a cheap business suit and attempts to walk to the Daily Planet as if he were one of their employees. Clark Kent notices the strange creature and quickly changes into Superman. The two begin fighting on the streets of Metropolis until Lois Lane arrives to witness the destruction. Bizarro shares many personality traits with Superman, including a fondness for Lois Lane. He leaves Superman be and whisks Lois away in his arms. He flies her to Lois's apartment and meets Lucy Lane for a second time. Superman recovers from Bizarro's most recent attack and discovers that his foe's skin secretes a chalky white residue. Analyzing the dust with his microscopic vision, Superman learns that Bizarro is in fact an android. He tracks his adversary back to Lois's apartment, and the two foes begin fighting once again. They fly directly towards one another, but once they collide, Bizarro's body explodes into a cloud of white dust. Miraculously, the dust settles over top of the blind Lucy Lane, completely restoring her eyesight. And this synopsis is taken from the DC Wiki. It leaves some stuff out of there, but I don't feel like a lot of it is too important. Just some minor details were left out, like Jimmy informing Lois and Clark that somebody had robbed a store that was by a jewelry store and had taken clothes, and the person that had taken the clothes was Bizarro. There was a scene between Lois and Lucy, and it's pretty much just Lois trying to comfort Lucy about her blindness. I absolutely love the fight in this. It takes up a majority of the issue, and it doesn't overstay its welcome, and that might just be due to John Byrne's pencils. They are absolutely wonderful in this issue. The panels are just so dynamic. The colors are awesome. The bits where there's a bit where Bizarro uses his heat vision on Superman, and that's really well done. There's a bit where Superman uses his heat vision on Bizarro to burn the clothes off of him so that he can protect his Clark Kent secret identity, and that's also really well done. I really like the darker color scheme on Bizarro, and it's a look that we would see again in the late 90s for Bizarro's world, which is pretty cool, complete with the roughed up hair. Not sure how I feel about Bizarro's flaky skin being the cure for Lucy's blindness, which was caused by a mugger tossing some acid or something in her eyes about a year ago. I don't know. It's not bad. It gives a little bit more depth to Bizarro, because there's a bit at the very end where Lucy asks Superman if he knew that the residue from Bizarro would cure her of her blindness, and he says, no, I didn't know that, but part of me thinks that that Bizarro character did know. So, you know, it adds a bit of character development to Bizarro. He's sympathetic. And, you know, he's not really a monster, he's just an imperfect clone. It's important to note that this issue takes place 2 years after the first issue of the miniseries, which is awesome. Again, that time passage that I talked about. There's a really great panel in here where Clark goes down the stairwell of the Daily Planet, and you get to see him rush down and change into Superman. Like, he actually takes off his tie and his shirt, and he puts on his uniform. The only thing I'm wondering is where he kept his cape. And it's done in the style where it's all in one panel, and you see, you know, the various stages of him changing. So he puts on his shirt, and then he takes off his pants to reveal the bottom part of his suit. And when he takes his pants off, there's no cape. And then in the next transition of him changing, he's putting his cape on. Where does he keep his cape? It's not too important, but I kind of want to know, just, you know, for future reference. Lex Luthor is more bald in this issue than he was in the previous issue. So he's slowly becoming the Lex Luthor we know. We get to see a return of the classic style Lex power suit, though he's not the one wearing it, which is pretty cool. Nice little homage there. There's not a whole lot to this issue, which is fine. It's mostly Superman coming across Bizarro, and that's pretty much all it is. And that's really all it needed to be, which is absolutely fine by me. So I'm going to take a quick break, and after that, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about The Man of Steel, issue number 6. Don't go away.
In a world where planets die.
I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Where good and evil fight a never-ending battle.
But millions of people will die.
Millions! Once again, the press underestimates me.
One man will become a hero.
Every world needs its heroes, Clark. They inspire us to be better than we are. Protect us from the darkness that's just around the corner.
One man will rise to the challenge.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
One man will wear spandex.
Well, one thing's for sure, nobody's gonna be looking at your face.
Mom?
Well, they don't call them tights for nothing.
Presenting The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, a podcast looking at the Man of Steel's history via his earliest adventures in comics, radio, and film. Featuring reviews, commentary, creator spotlights, and more. Join the adventure at GreatKrypton.com.
All right, and we're back. So this is Man of Steel, issue number 6. Same creative team, December 1986. And this issue is entitled The Haunting. So Superman's returning back to Smallville, and it's been a while. It's been about 5 years from what we can tell, since he's been back home. So he uses his super speed, and he lands at the Smallville bus station, changes into Clark, where Ma and Pa Kent are waiting for him. They're catching up, and how you been, son? You're doing a great job at the paper, and we've been reading all your stuff. Fantastic work. So they get in the car, and they're talking about all the things that have changed, and Pa Kent starts to mention something that has happened that they didn't tell him about when Martha elbows him in the chest, getting him to pipe down. Got a possum eating grin on her face. There's something up with you, Martha. I don't know. So later that night, they finish eating dinner, and there is some rhubarb pie. It's one of Clark's favorites. And Jonathan asks Clark to talk a little bit more about this Lois girl that he's been going on about in all his letters. So Clark tells them a little bit about her, and he says that she absolutely does not like Clark, but she absolutely adores Superman, and he's going to have to start trying to do something to change that. Later that night, Clark's trying to sleep. He can't. So he goes downstairs, and he's wondering about why Martha would trust Jonathan. And so he goes down to the kitchen, and he grabs some of that rhubarb pie, when suddenly the spirit of Jor-El appears, and he's talking in Kryptonese, and Clark is shocked. But the bigger surprise is that Clark drops the pie. Come on, man, you dropped the pie. Clark's having a little bit of difficulty understanding him because he can't speak Kryptonese. And the figure reaches out and touches him, and it zaps him back to Krypton. And he's in his Superman suit, and he sees Jor-El and Lara. Now, they start to run away, and he tells them not to run away, and he discovers that he's on this alien world. Lara comes up to him, mistaking him for Jor-El, and then quickly discovers that it's her son. She recognizes him as her son. Now, this vision is interrupted by Lana Lang, and she asks him what's wrong with Clark. He's in the middle of a field, and she saw him running from the Kent farm frantically. So they sit down, and they start talking, and Clark is kind of surprised to see Lana, because according to Ma and Pa Kent, she left Smallville years ago. And she did leave Smallville, but she came back. She starts going into this memory about how 10 years ago, Clark came to visit her on the night of the Victory Sock Hop after the big win of the game that we saw in the first issue of the miniseries. And, you know, they start talking and they go on a walk. It's very romantic. And Clark starts going on about how there's so much evil in the world and how somebody can stop this and how there's a way to fix these problems. And Lana is confused as to what's going on. She doesn't know what he's talking about. And he says, all right, well, I'll show you. And he picks her up and they fly. And so they fly around Smallville for a little bit. And he takes her back to her house, kisses her on the forehead, and says goodbye to both her and Smallville, and then flies away. And then Lana continues about how she was heartbroken because she loved Clark. She thought on that night that he was going to propose to her. She says that when he first came out as Superman, she thought about revealing his identity because she was so angry with him. But she figured that he's doing something good, that it's best to just leave it be. And so she eventually returned back to Smallville to live in the house that she used to live in with her Aunt Helen, who had passed away. She had told the Kents, and Martha understood why she wanted Clark not to know that she had returned, but Jonathan didn't really entirely understand it. So that's what Martha was shushing Jonathan about earlier. And Clark is apologizing profusely because he honestly didn't mean to hurt her. Later that morning, Clark is in his Superman suit and he's walking around and he's starting to finally question where he came from, where his true home is. And so he flies to the field where his ship landed 28 years ago and he discovers that it's gone. He wonders if Pa Kent had moved it, but he doubts that's the answer. And he notices that there are some tracks left by a large vehicle, and they're at least 6 months old. So he starts to go and follow them when Jor-El appears to him again. This time he can understand Jor-El. Superman starts writhing on the ground in pain, and he's getting all these images and these memories. Jonathan and Martha pull up in their pickup truck, and they see that Clark is hurting. And so Jonathan grabs a shovel from the back of the truck, and he hits the Jor-El apparition, and it disappears. Clark figures that it must have been a message from the ship and that it was electric, and the metal from the shovel must have short-circuited it, and the wood kept Jonathan from, well, dying. Jonathan and Martha ask him if he's all right, and he says, yeah, kind of, I guess. Just got a lot of stuff going on in my head. I really need to figure this out. So he flies away, and he starts questioning things even more. He starts putting together that he's not from Earth. He starts realizing that all the images that he had seen were about his birth, about his home, his true home. And he discovers that his father was Jor-El, his mother was Lara, and he is the sole survivor of the planet Krypton. He has this knowledge of all these poems and pieces of literature and religious information from Krypton, but it's all meaningless to him. He comes to the realization that though he might be Kryptonian bred, he is a child of Earth, that Jor-El and Lara may have been his parents, but Jonathan and Martha Kent were his mother and father. And that's the end. Absolutely dug this issue. It's not a lot of action, which is fine, but the dialogue is just so wonderfully written. The scene where we see the flashback to 10 years ago with Clark and Lana, it's just wonderful. The color scheme is brilliant. Again, John Byrne has a way of really showing aging. There's a panel where we see a young Lana Lang, and then the very next panel we see her 10 years forward into the present time. And it's still obviously the same character. You can tell that it is. There are still, you know, distinguishing traits, but she's aged and you can see it. You can see the wrinkles and you can see how time has really affected her. She's still beautiful, but she has definitely aged. Jor-El looks pretty cool in here. I think a lot of the colors really add to the whole spooky aspect. I love the way that Clark does his hair back, or at least the way that John Byrne draws Clark's hair back. It kind of reminds me of George Reeves' Clark, where it's just swept back, which is awesome. The atmosphere is great, especially all the early morning stuff, like the dawn stuff, which is wonderfully, wonderfully colored. The flying scenes are great. And then, of course, that very last image, that splash page of Clark standing there holding his cape. Absolutely love it. It's just so iconic. And then, of course, I did quote his little internal monologue there for one of the previous episodes. But I just love it. I absolutely adore that splash page. That and then the final page of the first issue of the Man of Steel miniseries. Absolutely beautiful. Perfect, spot on, 10 out of 10. There's not really much else I can say about this issue. This is a story that I absolutely loved. Not just this issue in particular, but the entirety of the miniseries. It's one that I've read multiple times, and I'll continue to read it multiple times into the future. It just has such great staying power with me. And part of that is just due to John Byrne's art. I don't know what it is about it, but it hits that sweet spot for me. A strong Superman, the cape is flowing and awesome, and I love a flowing cape so much. So I'll take another quick break, and we will jump into this episode's Adventures of Superman.
My name is Bob Fisher, and I host a podcast called Superman Forever Radio. In every episode, I'll take an aspect of this character's long history and talk about it, from 1938 to the present day, from the comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons. Superman has been part of my life for over 50 years, and if you'd like to know why, join me for each and every episode of Superman Forever Radio. So point your favorite podcatcher to Superman Forever Radio. That's Superman Forever Radio, supermanforever.com. We'll be right back.
right, we're back. Okay, this episode's Adventures of Superman episode is entitled The Monkey Mystery. And this is a synopsis written by Mr. James Lance over at the Superman homepage. Check his review out. It's pretty awesome. But the original broadcast date is October 17th, 1952. Written by Ben Peter Freeman and Doris Gilbert. Directed by Tommy Carr. And, of course, we have George Reeves as Superman / Clark Kent. Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane. Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen, John Hamilton as Perry White, Aline Roberts as Maria Maleska, Michael Vallant as Tony Ermenti, Harry Lewis as Harold Crane, William Challey as Max, Stephen Carr as the Doctor / the voice of the Sergeant, Fred Essler as scientist Jan Maleska, and Ned Roberts as Frisch. Central Europe, 1951. Scientist Jan Maleska has been declared an enemy of the state. He and his daughter Maria are in a cave hiding from the secret police. Dr. Maleska is weakened from running. He gives Maria a locket that had belonged to her mother. Inside is the greatest secret that can help mankind. Maria is to go to America and give it only to the President of the United States. Then, and only then, can the human race benefit from Maleska's creation. Maria's father has been killed by the secret police, and Maria herself has boarded an airplane to the United States in Lisbon. Enemy agents are ordered to contact Harold Crane, a man in Metropolis who works for them. Crane will be paid $200,000 to secure Maleska's formula. Once it is in the spy's hands, they can use it for their sinister plans. Daily Planet reporters Clark Kent and Lois Lane are on the streets of Metropolis enjoying the sight of some children being entertained by an organ grinder, Tony Ermenti, and his monkey, Pepe. Pepe is dressed in a Superman costume as he performs for the boys and girls. When the act concludes, Pepe gives each youngster a piece of paper with a fortune written on it. Lois also receives one. However, hers has an unusual message. Plane landed in Philadelphia because of fog in Metropolis. Jan Maleska's daughter taking Washington Limited noon today. New schedule being followed. The note is signed with the design of a paw and claws extended. Lois is now intrigued by what she has read. She has just left Clark to cover the Peterson trial while she takes a taxi. As the car drives away, Tony and Pepe try to chase her. The organ grinder calls to Lois, but his warnings of trouble go unheard. Lois may find herself in grave danger very soon. Lois is in her office at the Daily Planet preparing for a trip. She'll take an airplane to Baltimore and board the Washington Limited when the train stops there. Miss Lane intends to get an exclusive interview with Maria Maleska. Knowing that editor Perry White will want to know more about her voyage, Cub reporter Jimmy Olsen asks where she got her tip for the story. "From a monkey," she replies to the confused lad, who grabs Lois's fortune after she leaves. Tony and Pepe are walking into an alley. The monkey is climbing a pipe to enter the window of Harold Crane's apartment. He gives Crane a message that tells him of the paper that was given to Lois and its contents. Knowing that Tony remembered the note, Crane believes that the organ grinder is a risk to the plans for Dr. Maleska's formula. He orders his henchman Max to eliminate Tony by any means necessary. The safety of the current mission depends on it. Perry White is fit to be tied about Lois leaving without consulting him. Jimmy Olsen is showing him and Clark Kent the fortune Pepe had given her. Seeing that Lois's lead is for perhaps the biggest world event in history, Clark rushes out of Perry's office to the Washington Limited as Superman. Meanwhile, Lois has found Maria Maleska's cabin only to discover that the girl has been struck on the head. She attempts to aid Maria, but she is knocked unconscious by one of Crane's men. Superman may be too late to stop the spy's sinister organization. Superman has found Lois and Maria. As the doctor is caring for them, the Man of Steel is able to briefly question the scientist's daughter. Her locket containing her father's formula is missing. It's in the hands of Crane's agent. Neither Clark Kent nor Superman has had any luck in finding him. At the same time, the organ grinder Tony Armenti's body has been found stabbed to death. It looks like Superman's investigation has reached a dead end. Crane has just received word that his man Joe has got Maria's locket. Now, he only must wait for a European agent named Frisch to give him the money promised for the job. The ring of enemy spies is only one step closer to their insidious goals. The Daily Planet staff is having difficulty locating the information needed to solve this new mystery. The Maleska formula, which is a defense against atomic bombs, has not been found. The only possible lead in the case is the organ grinder's monkey Pepe. A citywide search for Pepe has begun. Even Crane, who has Maleska's discovery on microfilm, is desperately looking for the simian in a Superman suit. Jimmy is closer to getting Pepe when Crane's henchman Max grabs him. The thug and Jimmy fight over the animal. Unfortunately, the Cub reporter doesn't succeed in his task. Pepe has gotten away from Max, and young Olsen is Crane's prisoner. Jimmy is in serious danger if Superman doesn't save him. The police have Harold Crane's apartment building surrounded. Pepe, who is with Clark Kent, has climbed the same pipe to give the spy a false message. He shoots at the monkey, but Superman's indestructible body blocks the bullet. The Man of Steel then knocks Crane and Max's heads together. With the pair of criminals now unconscious, Superman unties Jimmy and hands him the Maleska formula to give to the police. The case is finally solved, and Lois Lane and Maria Maleska are recovering from their injuries. This leaves Jimmy with just one question. Hey, what happened to Pepe? His answer comes in the form of the little monkey in a Superman costume sitting in an open desk drawer eating a banana. Darn if that monkey is not adorable. And I know his name is Pepe and he's involved with some less than reputable people, but I'm still gonna go ahead and say that this is Beppo. Just for me, it's Beppo. He's a super monkey. This is a little bit of a slower episode, which is fine. Superman plays a little bit more of a stronger role in this episode, which is always nice to see. We get John Hamilton and Jack Larson back, which is also great to see. Absolutely love them. The chemistry between those two actors, just perfect. I absolutely love it. It's how I feel that Jimmy and Perry should always be written together. Just kind of like, you know, the gruff old man and the earnest and starry-eyed cub reporter. I just love it. George Reeves' Superman, fantastic. The two scenes that he's really in, amazing. The scene where he's talking to Maria, she comes out of this kind of coma or comes to consciousness, and he says, it's me, it's Superman, I'm your friend. I believe it. Absolutely believe it. He sells the role. He really does sell the role. His Clark Kent, brilliant. When he tells Jimmy to look for the monkey, he has a harsh tone, but you know he means business, and you know that he's not angry per se. He just wants to see these things done because a lot of stuff rides on this monkey. And then the action scene, it's a very brief action scene, but where he flies in the window and he stops the bullet from killing Pepe. Showstopper. Absolute showstopper right there, in the best possible sense. And I think this is one of the first times that we really get to see Superman throw down in the series, which is always nice to see, and we will get to see a lot more of that as the series goes on. But man, I absolutely love watching George Reeves' Superman work. It is awesome. One of my favorite episodes of the entire series is, it's technically not the last episode, just because they split up Superman and the Mole Man into two episodes and then put them at the very end of the first season. But it's, I think the episode's called Superman Day, and it's just Superman going and cleaning up crime in Metropolis. Pretty much 20-25 minutes of Superman just doing his thing. I do recommend this episode. If you like monkeys, you're gonna like this episode. I wouldn't recommend this one as highly as I would the previous episode, and that's not a bad thing. I pretty much recommend all episodes of this series. I can't recall a bad episode of the bunch, maybe a couple less than stellar pieces, but still fun to watch, and that, you know, these episodes are fun. So yeah, I'd still check it out. Alright, so there is no fan mail as of the recording of this episode, which is fine. But I would like to start another new segment on this show, and it's kind of weird. I keep adding segments to the show, you know, I have the super fact and the super quote, and then I have the super song at the very end. And I have the last half of the show dedicated to an episode of something or another. But I want to add another segment. And I was browsing through my my Superman library. And I was trying to find stuff that I could do for the next month or so of the podcast. It occurred to me that I had not really talked about my Superman encyclopedia. I bought it about a year ago. And I've used it for a couple of episodes, notably the, I think the Mr. Mixture Spitalik episode, the Valentine's Day episode, and I think that's it. But I want to start going through this with you guys, and just kind of reading a couple of entries in it every episode. It's a very large book. It is 495 pages. That's not including just the pages that are dedicated to pictures. So there's a lot of material in here, more than enough to keep me going for a very long time, a very, very long time. So without further ado, we'll go through about maybe, about three entries into this. And the first entry, Abdul. a genie on the pre-First Crisis Earth One who called out to Jimmy Olsen from within a lamp discovered by Superman in an ancient tomb in the Arabian Desert. The lamp, among other antiquities, was temporarily in Olsen's possession so that Jimmy could photograph them for a Daily Planet article. Initially, Olsen rubbed the lamp to see if he could conjure up Abdul to cure a toothache, but upon discovering that Abdul was indeed the famous genie of Aladdin's lamp, Olsen could not resist making further requests. In conversation, Olsen innocently used the word kill, not as part of a command, and discovered that, according to the magic rules, when a master of the genie used the word kill, he instantly changed places with the genie, and now Olsen had become Abdul's slave. Their positions could be reversed only if Jimmy could trick Abdul into saying kill. This he did when Abdul requested a screening of horror movies, and Jimmy gave him his choice of films, including Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Abdul picked the latter, speaking the phonem kill and dooming himself to return to the lamp. And that occurred in Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen number 42, cover dated January 1960. Abdullah, a magician of ancient Baghdad and secret leader of the infamous 40 Thieves. The Superman of the pre-First Crisis Earth-1, along with Batman and Robin, was sent to this time period by Professor Carter Nichols and met the legendary Aladdin. The group helped recover an inheritance that the naive Aladdin had traded to Abdullah in exchange for a worthless magic lamp. That appeared in World's Finest Comics, number 79, cover dated November/December 1955. At the next entry, Abernathy, K. Russell, that redirects us to Kryptonite Man, so we will get to that when we get to K. Absorbium, an element capable of soaking up any form of energy, gas, or liquid. Absorbium existed only at the Earth's core. In the 30th century of the Earth-1 universe, it was the original intended solution to the threat of the Sun Eater. And you can see that in Adventure Comics number 353, cover dated February 1967, and Action Comics number 343, cover dated November 1966. So, yeah, that's what we've got for the entries from the Essential Superman Encyclopedia, and that is written by Robert Greenberger and Martin Pasco. And this was published in 2010, so it's not entirely up to date. There are still 6 years of comics and characters and pieces of lore that are not in here, but this covers everything up to the New 52, so that's fine. Now, on to the super fact of the episode. Superman stands at 6 feet 3 inches and weighs 235 pounds. And the super quote comes from Mr. Max Landis. He is the guy behind the Death of Superman parody video and the 7-part miniseries Superman American Alien. And in this quote, he really sums up who Superman is, which is kind of ironic considering how poorly American Alien was written. There were some good parts in it. I've been meaning to talk about this miniseries for a while, and I don't know if I want to cover it on the show, just because some of it, the last couple issues really left a bad taste in my mouth. The first couple issues I really liked. The first issue in particular is really good. I feel like there is a point where he just misses the fundamental elements of who the character is. And he really made it out to be like his story was going to be the be-all, end-all of Superman stories and how it was going to completely redefine the character and just going to be the pinnacle of what a Superman story should be about. And it just fell short. Regardless of shortcomings of his miniseries and how he talked himself up. Here's the quote. Superman, when he goes after someone, is essentially not trying to beat them. He is trying to save them from themselves. You're looking at a god who walks amongst men. Good night, folks.
Out the door, just in time. Head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. But I can't do this all.
Superman. Just plugged into the wall. And that deck of tarot cards won't get you very far. There ain't no hand to break your fall. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta know just when to fold. But I can't do this all. Superman, I'm no Superman. That's finish line, won the race but lost your mind. Was it worth it after all? I need you here with me, 'cause love is all we need. Just take a hold of the hand that breaks the fall. Well, I know what I've been told. Gotta break free to break the mold. But I can't do this all. Superman, I'm no Superman, I'm no Superman. Superman.
For more Up, Up, and Away, visit upupandaway.podomatic.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching Up, Up, and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through Twitter at MarioFanFSteel and can be emailed at mbenesi94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up, Up, and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network. Superman and all related properties are copyright DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.